Brad Young. I represent Jennifer Kelly, the appellant here. Ms. Kelly should prevail here for two reasons. Under the law, she proved a de facto award. She also proved that a condition of her employment caused her injury.
Let me ask you about an opinion out of this court back in 2013, Roski versus Culbertson Company, etc. That opinion made it clear that in order for the concept of an implied award to be applicable, there had to be some detriment to the employee. It basically said that an implied award is based on estoppel law. Tell me what the detriment to the employee in this case is.
For one thing, she was injured in February of 2013, and for 21 months through the filing of three claims by her and the employer preparing award agreements and ultimately signing one, the employer never agreed to an award and never contested compensability.
Why is the employee in a more disadvantageous position?
Witnesses move out of state, witnesses die.
Which witness died?
Well,
just moved out of state. It's not a theoretical.
Yeah.
What's the actual prejudice?
That's not in there. I would respectfully disagree that this court has ever altered the three elements of a de facto award.
I wrote the opinion, so we might have to disagree on that one.
Well,
and in fact, the language from Roski is that the de facto award doctrine does not, quote, apply where an employee has neither suffered prejudice nor been placed in a more disadvantageous position.
Right.
So for my next question, I want you to assume that that is in fact the element. Just as I read it, what is your best case?
Yes, sir. And in that case, I would defer to Commissioner Marshall, who in his dissent
would point out a theoretical possibility, but not an actual.
The challenge is there is a lulling effect to this. In the vernacular of the workers' compensation bar, this was an accepted award. That's the reality. That she was hurt. They started paying money. She filed claims. They never filed a denial. And so the de facto award doctrine exists in the law. It has three elements.
Well,
and so she's not marketing because she believes this is an accepted award.
There's a good argument based on Roski that the de facto award isn't good law anymore, because when it was first created, it was based upon the requirement that the employer file the award.
Mm-hmm.
That statute has since been changed, and now the employee may also file the award. So, I mean, I agree with you, it hasn't been completely overruled, but I'm not sure that it's quite as solid as you would like it to be.
I do not have the case cite at hand, but I do recollect the court recently noted that part of the law is if the court interprets a statute in a certain way and the legislature subsequently reenacts the law, then the legislature has approved that judicial gloss on the law. And a decision of this court relied on that legal reasoning to affirm the validity of the de facto award argument.
But the problem, of course, extending the legislative acquiescence argument is, if Judge Petty is correct and there was a change in the statute that changes the kind of the premise of de facto awards, then the question is, does that change indicate a lack of acquiescence?
I apologize.
If the General Assembly changed the statute upon which this court first came up with the concept of a de facto award, if they changed that statute, may not be legislative acquiescence. That may be legislative action.
I'm gathering thoughts from another case. I believe there's Supreme Court precedent that says, in that regard, on that question, the General Assembly did not expressly address, for example, They didn't say, we disavow, there shall be no de facto awards in the Commonwealth. And I believe, again, my memory is that it requires some definitive statement from the General Assembly to say, otherwise then you really are kind of in the wilderness. And well, has the General Assembly, you know, disavowed this? And
I take it from your argument that if actual prejudice is an element of a de facto award, you can't show it on this record. And the reason I ask is because that's one of my questions, but you also have a merits argument, and you may want to get to that. That's your position.
Well, I defer to the fact that it lulls a claimant into not marketing because they think they have an award, and so.
But the duty to market would only arise if you had a compensable claim.
Well, and this our argument here is that the employer, again, looking at those three elements, for example, that are set out in Lysable, the employer stipulated there was an agreement here. Interestingly, the deputy commissioner said there was no agreement with regard to average weekly wage. The commission didn't make that finding. They implicitly found there was an agreement that the employer then withdrew.
How do you find that they implicitly found that there was the agreement?
Page 7 of the opinion, we further find no merit in the claimant's argument that the withdrawal of an agreement to an award on the same day a signed agreement form is filed is in bad faith. Again, the deputy commissioner...
But how does that speak to the earlier... agreement that you're alleging in terms of the weekly wage?
At page 62 is the agreement both parties signed. It has a average weekly wage of $357.51 and a net payment to her of $238.75. At page 70 of the appendix is a statutory report the employer has to file, which was filed in February of 15, it shows that specific amount. Yeah. The parties had a meeting of the minds as
the statute,
to this average week.
The statute also gives them 30 days in which to withdraw that.
And that ability, if taken to its logical end, means the end of the de facto award
right.
doctrine.
But the flip side of it, and I understand we're kind of on a knife's edge here, it seems to do the opposite. An employer could never withdraw from the agreement, even if they do it within 30 minutes or 30 days, because you're going to say there was a de facto award.
I respectfully disagree. There are two other elements to the de facto award, which are present here, that may not be present in the other case. That ability to withdraw should not be able to exist in a vacuum. It has to be reconciled. The first element of the de facto award is an agreement. And if the employer can always withdraw, there goes the de facto award doctrine.
Are you aware of any case involving de facto awards where we have said that prejudice is not an element?
I am not. Turning to the merits of her fall, whether or not she suffered a compensable injury in the fall, we concede that this fall started in a non-compensable way. But on the way down, it became compensable when she tangled with the mop and bucket. Now, the Heritage Hall case says if a condition of the workplace contributed to the injury. Well, the mop, her job included mopping the floors. The mop and bucket were there.
But how did grabbing the mop with your right hand injure your left thumb?
I think I believe we cite case law that says you don't have to explain the precise mechanism of injury in something that happens in that fashion. The thing that occurred to me here is, let's say someone works in a power plant that generates electricity with steam turbines. They're walking along and they stumble over their own feet. That's not compensable. But then they land on a hot steam line and suffer burns. Condition of the workplace caused the injury. Here, it's not, from our perspective, it's not possible to discount the role of the mop and bucket in her injury.
But isn't that a quintessential question of fact as to what, if any, role the mop and bucket played in her injury? And if it is, hasn't that question been decided? And in fact, it was decided without dissent.
No, there was no finding. The deputy commissioner said there was no mention of the bucket in her testimony. We're just going to look at the rug. The deputy commissioner and the commission focused exclusively on the rug issue. They never touched the mop and bucket. There was no finding at all about the mop and bucket.
I read the commission's opinion as finding, as expressing their conclusion that the rug was the sole cause of the fall and resulting injury. In the light most favorable to the prevailing party, what's wrong with that reading?
Deputy Commissioner said, as there was no mention of the bucket, we won't even consider it. And the commission quoted the Deputy Commissioner's opinion and said, you know, the rug didn't cause the fall, you lose. And there was, from our perspective, there was absolutely no consideration of the mop and bucket whatsoever as a condition of the employment.
Was there any evidence that the mop and bucket had anything to do with the injury? That the injury would not have been sustained had the mop and bucket not been there?
I believe the medical records she talks about in there, she wasn't sure, but you know, she tangled with the mop and bucket on the way down and suffered injury by the time that she fell. I see that I'm in my rebuttal time.
You may. Ms. Dascott?
May it please the court. My name is Amanda Tapscott, and I represent the appellees. The appellant here argues, according to the appellees, incorrectly that there is not reliance as an element of the de facto award doctrine, and we would argue that, of course, there must be reliance as an element.
You did not mention Roski in your brief, and I was wondering if, as I was reading it, if you had pretty much conceded that there was some detrimental reliance on the award.
No, Your Honor. In fact, at the hearing, the claimant did indeed present testimony as well as records in support in an exhibit of marketing efforts. So we would argue there was no reliance. She filed claims for benefits, multiple claims for benefits, for both medical award. She filed for temporary total disability, temporary partial disability, permanent partial disability. She filed for multiple body parts.
Is the existence of whether or not there was detrimental reliance and prejudice, is that a question of law or is that a question of fact?
I believe that it would be a mixed question of law and fact, Your Honor.
Did the commission make a factual finding on prejudice?
I think the commission did make a factual finding in that they found that a de facto award did not apply in this claim.
I guess, and it may not be answerable for the record, and you can tell me it's not, why did we have the 6 hours of signing the agreement and then withdrawing it? I mean, how did that happen? Wouldn't it have been easier just to deny the claim from the beginning?
Yes, Your Honor, and I think that the... not too far into it, but I think the record does paint a picture that as this claim progressed, the 20-day order responses that are in the record do reflect that the agreement forms had been sent to the claimant within 3 weeks of when the voluntary payments commenced. However, there's no indication that the appellant returned those agreement forms until 6 months later. During that time, of course, counsel was obtained by both parties and the litigation commenced. In the meantime, the record reflects that disputes began to emerge pertaining to the average weekly wage. Discovery, it was noted there were discovery filings within the record as well. And as discovery progressed, it also emerged that there were two distinctly different stories with regard to how this accident occurred, and at that point, the compensability dispute also arose.
I want to go back to a question Judge Russell just asked you about the detrimental reliance or the injury to the claimant, not the injury to the claimant, but the Roski issue. I was looking at the opinion letter of the commission. And they did not address whether there was any detrimental reliance or disadvantageous position. If you're correct that that's a mixed question, it has a factual component, how can we decide this case based on Roski? Wouldn't we have to remand it back to the commission to determine whether there was any detrimental reliance?
I believe the commission addressed that in adopting a portion of the deputy commissioner's opinion, because the deputy commissioner specifically addressed that in his opinion in stating that the claimant filed claims, multiple claims, asserting and preserving all of her rights for temporary total, temporary partial, permanent partial benefits within the statute of limitations, protecting all of her rights, and had an opportunity to proceed toward the hearing. And it also noted that she had, and I believe the full commission opinion also notes, that she had adequate time to prepare for the hearing, over 5 months before it went to the hearing after the claim was referred to the docket. So she had adequate time to prepare for the hearing in the matter as well.
The appellant talks about the failure to be able to market as the prejudice. Do you want to address that?
Yes. The marketing defense, she actually went forward and presented evidence of marketing, and she was marketing as of June of 2014, according to the documents that she presented at the hearing as an exhibit, and she actually presented testimony as to her marketing efforts at the hearing. So she was actively marketing beginning in June of 2014, and I believe she actually presented testimony to marketing efforts made before that, before she began documenting it in writing on her marketing logs that were presented at the hearing.
And marketing could only be a potential prejudice if there was an otherwise compensable claim.
Correct. And because it was found not to be compensable, marketing is a moot point in this matter.
And it's a paragraph that discusses she had ample of time to argue the hearing. She was a claim by the commission. The last line of that paragraph before the conclusion, the commission opinion says, we do not find the defendant's decision to contest the claims at the evidentiary hearing unfairly prejudiced the claimant. Would that be a finding of no prejudice?
Yes, Your Honor.
If there had been prejudice, if she had lost the ability to file a claim, if the statute had run, if she had not filed claims for whatever reason she did, whether she thought she had to or whether she had, if she had been lulled into not doing that and lost, would this be a de facto reward case?
Your Honor, I believe that that has been addressed in multiple cases before the commission, that were it a change in condition application and there been a prior award, that may be a de facto award finding, grounds for a de facto award finding, had there been a prior award, were the claim to be compensable, whereas it is more of a jurisdictional defense matter that cannot be waived if it's a statute of limitations defense pursuant to the findings in, and if you will bear with me just one moment, please, I could find that case for you.
But, I mean, it's always struck me the classic de facto award case is we're going to take care of you. Here's your medical benefits. Here are your wage benefits.
Yes.
Everything's okay. And so the claimant thinks, I don't have to do anything. Everything's going the way I think. Then 2 years and a day afterwards, those payments stop and they say, and it's too late for you to file. I mean, that seems to me to be the case that the de facto award is intended to address.
Correct. And most of the cases that have held that the statute of limitations has been waived have been in cases where it has been a change in condition application. And it is asserted that it cannot be waived in an original claim for benefits matter because that is a statutory issue as to whether somebody is entitled to benefits under the Act. So the matter of whether somebody has met all the elements of an original claim for benefits is more of the challenge to whether the de facto award can be defended against. Pursuant to addressing the claimant's arguments regarding the arising out of prong of the brief, we would argue that the appellant presented no evidence whatsoever that the mop or the bucket contributed in any way to the accident or the injuries that the appellant sustained. The testimony at the hearing was that the sole cause of her injury was the rug, and the only indication of any involvement of the mop was grabbing the mop with her right hand. She specifically testified she does not know how she hurt her left thumb. She denied touching the mop with her left hand, so she has not explained any involvement or any contribution of the mop or the bucket to her injuries in any way. So we would argue that there is no added risk of the employment in this claim, just as the commission has found. And we would argue that it was a factual finding that there was no involvement of the mop or bucket, and there is credible evidence to support that factual finding, and therefore it cannot be disturbed on appeal. So we found that the compensability finding of the commission is proper in this claim. Because compensability was disputed, of course, we would argue that...
What about Mr. Young's argument that there's a signed agreement form that says we're accepting it, the insurance company's records say that they're accepting it, and that on the average weekly wage point, there's, well, a blank, and it's filled in?
Yes.
Sounds like an agreement.
An agreement is not the same as an award. Pursuant to the cases, an award is not an award until it is officially an award. And it does not become an award until it is approved by the commission. It must be in a form acceptable to the commission, and it must be reviewed by the commission and entered by the commission until it becomes binding and enforceable upon the parties. If it is not entered...
But at that point, it's a de jure award. It's not a de facto award, correct?
Correct. Correct,
well,
Your Honor.
Then what about the argument that if we take your position to its logical conclusion, there are no more de facto awards because at the end of 30 days, they're all de jure awards?
Well, at that point, of course, I think there are still de facto awards so long as the other prongs of the tests are met. There's no compensability dispute, there's no average weekly wage dispute, and the parties have made payments and have met all the elements of the de facto award. And I think a lot of those claims still exist in this world. But either party is free to withdraw from any agreement prior to its entry, and any party is free to withdraw from any award after its entry within the review period. And that goes both ways. It's not a one-way street, of course. So we would argue that it has not become an enforceable agreement at that point. There was an active dispute, and I think it's active on both sides. The record reflects that even up to the point of the hearing, average weekly wage was disputed by both parties. Position statement had to be submitted post-hearing for the deputy commissioner to ultimately decide that issue, which was not ultimately decided due to the compensability finding in the matter. And compensability was actively disputed at the hearing and in good faith, as the deputy commissioner and the commission both found it to be not compensable. So there were grounds to dispute the compensability of this claim. So in this matter, though the act is read, and I think the de facto award doctrine exists for the benefit of injured workers to protect those who have suffered injuries due to hazards of the employment. I think the key phrase is due to hazards of the employment. They're not meant to be protected for a general injury that is not due to a hazard of the employment. So they must still meet those elements. And if there is a compensability dispute, they should not be awarded benefits simply because voluntary payments have been made at some point, and either party is still free to assert defenses to those underlying elements of the claim until there is an actual enforceable award that has been approved by and entered by the commission as to those essential elements.
All right.
Thank you very much
for your argument.
Yes.
I don't believe the commission adopted the deputy commissioner's opinion. I'd like to get that on the record. And in that regard, the deputy commissioner again found a dispute over the average weekly wage. The commission made no such finding. Again, at most, they made an implicit finding of an agreement, and the employer did not appeal that implicit finding. There's certainly no express finding of a disagreement over the average weekly wage. in the commission's findings of fact and conclusions of law. Also, again, I refer to pages 62 and 70 of the appendix. As of November 12, 2014, there was a meeting of the minds on all elements of this claim. That didn't last long, but it was an agreement.
Is there an implied term of every such agreement, though, with the commission that it's not a real agreement until 30 days have passed?
If so, that's the end of the de facto award doctrine. That ability to withdraw can't be looked at in a vacuum. You have to look at these other, the other evidence supporting a de facto award, and those two concepts have to be reconciled somehow. Otherwise, the de facto award is dead. And regarding the de facto award, when you look at, for example, Lysable, it has three elements, and the claimant thinks, well, if I prove these three things, I've got a de facto award. If the employer makes a U-turn, as the case says here, and we go to a hearing, then the claimant, and this is perhaps something it would be helpful for the court to clarify, at that point there are five elements, the three elements that Lysable lists, plus the requirement that you not show, that you show detriment, plus the requirement that the claimant show a compensable injury. So it's gone from three to five. If the employer says, we're going to make a U-turn, boom. Notably, on the marketing issue,
if you have to prove the compensable injury, you don't need to prove the de facto award because you'll win the claim.
Well, the de facto award is...
Right, it becomes a dead letter.
Well, and you know, the de facto award is arguably, when you look at it, it's a settlement. It's where the employer has gone, made so many actions that you have to say, well, the catch-22 is if this ability to withdraw nullifies every agreement, even in the de facto award situation. In other words, any agreement has to become a de jure agreement. There's no de facto award doctrine anymore. I mean, the award agreement is the most formal expression of an agreement. Well, then if the employer can repudiate that, then what if you had a Hyla Adkins as the adjuster here, and what if you had her testimony? Because you can prove a de facto award through testimony of the adjuster. Yeah, we agreed. Well, the employer could say, well, even here, the employer could say, well, we withdraw our agreement because it's never been de jure, and then 30 days pass. It doesn't compute.
But is there anything here other than the making of voluntary payments to...
21 months without a denial? If you look at November 12, 14, February...
That would occur in every case in which benefits were paid without an actual award having been entered. There's a period of time. This is just voluntary payments. That's the only thing we're talking about.
I see my time is out.
You may answer.
Employers pay voluntary benefits even when they deny claims. In this case, there was no denial. Again, for 21 months, not only was there no denial, but the employer on two occasions told the commission, that's pages 30 and 45, I think, of the appendix, that we are sending agreements to the claimant. So the employer is getting a lot of power here.
Mr. Young, I think Judge Russell has one final question.
One very good question. I think I know the answer, but I think you were very candid in your brief. If the commission could correctly determine from the record that the rug was the sole cause, that's no different than tripping on a normal non-defective set of stairs, firm and arising out of perspective. I know you disagree that the record supports a conclusion that the rug was the sole cause of the fall and the injury, but assuming that in the abstract,
if the mop and bucket weren't there and she just tripped on the rug, it's non-compensable. I can see the fall began as a non-compensable fall, but it ended as a compensable fall because during the fall she tangled with the mop and bucket.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll greet counsel and then address our next case, Hodnett versus Commonwealth.